Lori Vallow wants a new trial. Does she have a chance? Ghislaine Maxwell is learning that snitches get stitches. Alex Murdaugh is back in court, this time federal court. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for joining us. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't, like if you do, leave me a comment, and hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. I want to thank everyone for joining us last night. We had a great conversation, not only in our Tuesday night live program, but our Patreon show as well. Thanks for joining us every Tuesday night. Join us. All right, let's go ahead and support the people that support Crime Talk. Go to crimetalksearch.com. When you go to that link, guess what? You're going to be able to access a background subscription service. Whether you do one search or 100 searches, you are going to have reports literally prepared while you wait, and they are going to be sent to you. And that information is going to have whether somebody is on, you know, one of those public registries. Do they have a criminal history? Have they been abusing children? Have they filed for bankruptcy? Do they have liens against them? Do they own property? Are they telling you the truth about their story? Check them out. You are committing dating malpractice if you do not do a background search on somebody new coming into your life. Do it now. All right, let's go ahead and open the record for May 31st, 2023, and let's begin today's docket. First on the docket, Lori Vallow wants a new trial. Last Friday, Jim Archibald and John Thomas, Vallow's attorneys, claim that a juror knew about evidence that wasn't presented during the trial and that instructions given to the jurors were confusing. The lawyer cited a portion of the juror's interview with East Idaho News where he was asked about the efforts of law enforcement. The juror responded that police in Arizona had some significant red flags before and after Charles Vallow's death, Lori Vallow's fourth husband, was shot and killed by Lori Vallow's brother, Alex Cox. The juror said, "We didn't consider this during our deliberations because it was clear to us. The instructions were clear. Arizona evidence and testimony is only for demonstrative purposes," the juror said. Now, during the trial, Archibald and Thomas repeatedly objected to having the evidence and the testimony from the Arizona cases brought into Daybell's Idaho case. In their motion, the attorneys argue that evidence regarding Arizona was not admitted for demonstrative purposes, as the juror suggested, but was evidence to show some other reason other than bad character. To confuse demonstrative evidence and character evidence is easy to do. Hence, the defense objections should have been sustained, the attorneys write in their motion. They also argue that the juror referenced evidence in Arizona that was not part of the Idaho trial. And they say, quote, "We can only conclude that the juror relied on the information not presented in court to reach their conclusion that Arizona dropped the ball and should have done more, even before Charles Vallow was shot and killed by Alex Cox." Now, in a follow-up interview with East Idaho News, the juror said he was unaware of the Arizona video and the information until he watched a Dateline NBC show on May 14th, 2 days after the trial was over. The original interview with the juror was conducted on May 17th. Now, obviously, once the verdict were final and the jurors were released from jury duty, they could do whatever they want to as far as looking into the case. And the juror said that on Sunday, his wife said, "Do you want to watch a new episode of Dateline?" And he said, "Sure, let's do it." They watched it. He was intrigued when he learned in Arizona there was footage from an encounter with Charles Vallow when he was clearly telling the police that his wife had deemed him a zombie. Those were significant red flags about something that's not normal. Now, Mr. Archibald and Mr. Thomas have asked Judge Boyce to schedule a hearing so that they can present argument on these issues. Prosecutors obviously will be able to respond. Now, we talked about this last night. The motion is rather straightforward. The court misdirected the jury in a matter of law as it relates to the jury instructions. Now, this is really what it comes down to. The juror issue, kind of a side issue, okay? I don't think it's going to get any play. But the court misdirected the jury in a matter of law as it related to the instruction on conspiracy. And it said that The indictment filed by the grand jury on May 25th of 2021 states that the conspiracy, Chad Guy Daybell, Lori Noreen Vallow, and Alex Cox, who's now deceased, and other co-conspirators, both known and unknown. This language clearly states that at least five people entered into a conspiracy. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think the known and unknown is standard language. But then it says Chad, Lori, Alex, and other co-conspirators. The trial court, however, at the government's request, allowed the trial jury to consider a conspiracy of only two people, Lori and Chad, Lori and Alex, or Chad and Alex. This change of the definition of the conspiracy from the grand jury to the trial jury completely changed the complexity of this case by allowing the insertion of the and/or language. For the past 2 years, the defense has been put on notice that the conspiracy involved at least five people. This notice was clear from the language of the indictment, and to have the government and the court permit a conspiracy of just two people instead of five was prejudicial, unlawful, and should require a new trial. And I think this is still one of the stronger issues here is the court misdirected the jury in a matter of law as it related to the amended indictment. At the close of the evidence of this case, the government moved to amend the indictment 2 years after it was filed by the grand jury for a clerical error. The amendment was not a clerical error, but changed the statute in the definition of grand theft. Repeated attempts by the defense to remand the indictment last year were objected to by the government and denied by the court. The court should have likewise denied the government's request to amend the indictment. Now, whether the language of the grand theft charge included intent to deprive or intent to deceive was an element of proof to be determined by the trial jury and should not have been allowed to be amended by the government. And I totally agree with that. I've never seen anything like it. When you have an indictment, it stays that way. Apparently, Idaho, you know, you can amend an indictment. Unbelievable. We're not talking about a small little change. We're talking about a different subsection in the statute. Unbelievable. I'm still shocked. And it shows incompetence by the prosecution. And if those prosecutors were in private practice and they made such an error, guess what they would be doing when their client lost? They would be calling their malpractice carrier, ladies and gentlemen. But the government, the judge, bailed them out. And I'm glad that the defense is calling them out on this particular situation. Now, I saw somebody said, Scott, you don't seem like you're very fair and impartial. You're always for the defense. No, I just want the defense to get a fair shake, okay? I think Lori Vallow was engaged in a conspiracy to kill J.J. Tilley and Tammy Daybell. But you can't violate somebody's rights to get to the result that you want. That's what we are always saying here. And don't get me wrong. I thought the defense did a terrible job. I thought it was one of the worst presentations I've seen a defense attorney. At least act like you want to be there. At least act like you've maybe read the discovery, maybe had a couple of notes on your legal pad that you actually prepared an opening and a closing statement. We got plenty of criticism to go around. I'm sure that they would have criticism for Crime Talk. Bring it on. It only makes us better. Okay. And then obviously the other issue was the whole juror thing, whether it's juror misconduct. Now, here's the thing. The juror came back, did an interview later and said, oh, it was all clear because I watched that stuff. But guess what? That's not what he said in the interview. He didn't qualify in the interview saying, oh, I watched it on, learned about it on Nightline. No, that's not what he said. Just saying. And like I said this last night in our Patreon show, when jurors are selected, and I know they're instructed not to go Google anything about the case, but let's face it, they all go home and start Googling the attorneys. They all get home and start seeing what they can find out about the case. I'm just saying, just the way I've seen. We'll see if she gets a new trial. I don't think Judge Boyce is going to get a new trial. This is going to have to come down to appellate courts, and they may say, hey, this is such a circus, we're not going to do it again. It's the SOB rule. That's right, the SOB rule. The person's a son of a gun, and guess what? Although there was errors, it was harmless. That's what they're going to say. Anyway, we move on. Next, snitches get stitches. We've all heard that term, right? Or snitches wind up in ditches. Well, guess what? The hunter is now becoming the hunted. Ghislaine Maxwell apparently is afraid of a beatdown behind bars after she outed a couple of Cuban inmates trying to extort her. Now, the Cubans were apparently sent to the SHU, which is the special housing unit, for 47 days after Miss Maxwell reported them to the FCI Tallahassee because they were demanding her commissary, and she didn't like to be extorted. Can you imagine such a thing? Ghislaine Maxwell wanting to go to the authorities because somebody's being mean and threatening them and wanting her to do something? My God, is that karma or what? Well, anyway, apparently she is a little freaked out now because these two Cuban inmates have been released or will be soon back into general population. And, well, let's just say they want to even the score. Now, Miss Maxwell is apparently scared for the retribution. She's refusing to use the shower stall, which is oftentimes where ambushes take place and people are beat down in prison. And she's also getting a special escort to her prison library job by a correctional officer. The Cubans are apparently described as tattooed, tall, and thick, and they've been moved to a different unit. Now, the SHU, that's the special housing unit. That's solitary confinement. Usually you're locked down for 23 hours a day in there, and it's punishment. It's meant to be punishment. And people that go there, they're not happy when they get out, okay? It's not nice. Anyway, apparently these Cuban inmates have a reputation for being tough and mean inside the jail, and they're saying that Miss Maxwell needs to pay for those 47 days that they did. Well, we'll have to wait and see if the extortion of her commissary was worth all this. It's alleged that the Cubans were demanding that Miss Maxwell spend her entire commissary limit on those two Cubans. Otherwise, they were going to extort her. They even wrote her a note, which was kind of a bad idea, right? Don't put threats in writing. And then Miss Maxwell took the note to the security personnel there at the prison. And they take that kind of serious. But, like I said, the Cubans were sent to 47 days. And as I said, the Cubans were sent to the SHU for 47 days. And everybody knows when you go to prison, you don't snitch. If you have a problem, you handle it. You resolve it peacefully, either with something of value or you fight. So when these ladies get out, Miss Maxwell is said to have been freaking out. And apparently was even having a breakdown and demanded that she be transferred. She could check herself into segregation and go into protective custody, but that's pretty similar to doing the SHU. It's kind of a quality of life thing. You don't get to go out for your exercise. You don't get to go out and have your job. So not good for Miss Maxwell. Like I said, isn't that ironic that Ghislaine Maxwell is being intimidated by people in somewhat of a position of authority and is making her feel uncomfortable? It's almost like, you know, when she was allegedly, she was convicted of basically sexual exploitation of young ladies for rich and powerful people. Imagine what that feels like, Miss Maxwell. Imagine. Hey, Alex Murdoch. It's been a little while since he's been in the news, right? Well, he has pled not guilty when he appeared in a Charleston federal courthouse today to all charges alleging that he siphoned off some $4 million from his dead housekeeper's life insurance settlement and defrauded his law partner and other clients for 16 years. Like I said, he entered not guilty count to all 22 counts, and a trial date will be set in the future. However, attorneys representing Mr. Murdoch told the magistrate judge that they expect him to change his plea in the future, indicating that they're working on a plea agreement. As we brought to you last week, Murdoch was indicted last week for schemes to steal millions of dollars from his clients, friends, and his family's 100-year-old law firm. That 28-page indictment says that crimes occurred between 2005 until 2021 when he was arrested. According to the indictment, Murdoch's friend and fellow attorney Corey Fleming helped him in his money schemes. Fleming pled guilty to similar charges last week. Like I said, Mr. Murdoch's attorneys, Jim Griffin and Dick Harpatulian, issued a statement last week when the indictments were returned, noting that Mr. Murdoch had been cooperating with the United States Attorney's Office and other federal agencies. let's face it, Mr. Murdoch is going to prison for a long time. What his best deal would be is to try to spend as much time as he can in federal prison. He's in state custody, but now he's in federal custody, and the feds could keep him until his sentence is served. Much better quality of life than a state prison. Just saying. I know it's all relative when you're in prison, not a great quality of life, but there's different levels of quality of life in prison. At least what I've heard from clients.
As a pet owner, you want to give your furry friend the very best. That's why Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect choice. These delicious treats not only taste great, but they also provide a wide range of health benefits for your pet. CBD has been shown to have many positive effects on dogs, including reducing anxiety, alleviating pain and inflammation, and improving overall wellness. Baked in Colorado's treats are infused with premium, full-spectrum CBD oil, meaning your pet will benefit from the whole plant extract. Not only that, but Baked in Colorado's treats are made with all-natural human-grade ingredients, so you can feel good about what you're giving your pet. They're also free from wheat, corn, and soy, making them a great option for dogs with food sensitivities. Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect way to support your pet's health and well-being. With various flavors, including peanut butter, pumpkin, and bacon, your dog will love them too. So why wait? Head to www.bakedincolorado.com today and order your dog a bag of these delicious and nutritious treats. Your pet will thank you for it.
And finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Florida man is facing domestic charges for allegedly striking his girlfriend in the face with, guess what? That's right, food. What's the food of the day? Steak. That's right. At least he's got a little bit of class. And apparently the blows to the face from the steak left seasoning on the victim's cheek by the time the police arrived. Now, the police allege that Joshua Dumar and his 29-year-old girlfriend were arguing Sunday night in Florida when the attack occurred. At one point, the woman locked Dumar out of the home, but later let him back in the residence. And according to the arrest affidavit, the woman was lying on the couch when Mr. Dumar picked up a steak and smacked the victim two times on the left cheek, leaving seasoning from the steak on the victim's cheek. Now, the battery, a sheriff deputy noted, was captured on a Ring camera inside the home, which the victim has had since 2016. Now, the defendant was arrested for domestic battery and booked into the county jail on the misdemeanor charge of assaulting somebody with a steak. Mr. Dumar is a landscaper, and like I said, he was released on his own recognizance. He's been ordered to have no contact with the victim, and Mr. Dumar has a rap sheet that includes convictions for DUI and possession of cocaine and marijuana. Now, I'm just going to go on a limb here. Doesn't really say in the police affidavit, but I would think somebody had been drinking. I'm just going to go on the limb here. There seems to be a trend here. Have you ever noticed that, ladies and gentlemen? Poor decisions are made oftentimes under the influence of alcohol. Just an observation. Do with it what you may. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.